The James M. Slater MD Proton Treatment and Research Centre became a pioneer in the field of proton therapy the moment its doors first opened in 1990. Located at the Loma Linda University Medical Centre in California, it remained the only centre of its kind in the United States until 2003. Over 15,000 patients have been treated there, and it continues to treat more patients annually than any other proton treatment centre in the US. This requires a large team of highly trained and cutting-edge clinicians who are involved in treating, teaching, and researching. On today's show, we're going to discuss how proton therapy is now beginning to be used for a new application, breast cancer. We'll go on location to Loma Linda, California. All that along with a healthy recipe on today's show. Stay tuned, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is on your screen every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. If you want to watch a previous episode or find all of our recipes, then go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. The physicians who treat cancer are called oncologists. They can be involved in surgery or chemotherapy, or in radiation. And on today's show, join us as we meet a radiation oncologist who's an expert in the field of proton radiation. But now, before we start our conversation, let me introduce you to Heather. Watch her moving story.
For 9 years, I was a stay-at-home mom, and I did everything from PTA to mommy and me, anything and everything that involved the children, up until my husband got laid off, and I was happy that I was healthy enough at the time to go out and help the family out. I had about 3 different jobs at one point, working up to 75 hours a week. In June of 2011, I found out that we were expecting baby number 4, which was a huge blessing. It was unexpected. The doctors had told us that it would be a miracle for us to have another child. So, you know, it was highly unexpected, but such a blessing. About a month after that, I had gone in for a physical, and I got a phone call. It was actually on my birthday, I believe it was. I had just turned 32, and the doctor said, "You do in fact have breast cancer." So you go from being excited that, you know, you're going to have a brand new baby, and the excitement turns to worry at the same time. At that point, I didn't know if I was, you know, even going to get to keep the baby. We got sent over to Loma Linda, ended up having the mastectomy right at my 3-month mark. If I didn't have the mastectomy, there would be a good chance that I wouldn't be alive to even see the baby. And exactly 6 weeks out of that, I started chemo. And I was on chemo until I was 32 weeks pregnant. And I was told by the oncologist that if my body didn't, and the baby as well, didn't have exactly at least bare minimum of 4 weeks out of chemo, that it could be deadly for both of us because our immune systems were compromised.
Joining me today from Loma Linda University Medical Center is Dr. David Bush, radiation oncologist and vice chair of clinical affairs. He's also the director of residency training in radiation medicine at Loma Linda. So let's take a quick trip to Loma Linda in California for an interview with Dr. Bush. Join us. Dr. Bush, as a radiation oncologist, what is your role in the treatment of someone who has cancer?
Cancer treatment is usually decided by a team of physicians, usually including a medical oncologist, a surgical oncologist, and a radiation oncologist. So between those three, treatment decisions are made on how to best treat each individual patient. So my role would be to provide input and treatment for the radiation treatment part of it.
But you meet and discuss a case right up front before any treatment has started,
right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Typically, new cases, newly diagnosed with cancer, would be presented at what we call a tumor board, where all of the pertinent parties would be present, to where you would review the imaging, radiology, pathology, and then make treatment decisions there.
And then you might not get to meet that patient until some way down the track when they've done
often, sometimes I'll have seen them before that tumor board meeting and sometimes afterwards if the decision is made that radiation treatment is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Now, radiation therapy is a very important part of cancer therapy, isn't it? Can you explain what standard radiation involves, how it works?
Right. Standard conventional radiation would be used in a lot of different settings. Sometimes as the primary standalone treatment, sometimes in conjunction following surgery or given with chemotherapy, sometimes at the same time. So there's a lot of different ways that radiation therapy is integrated into the overall treatment plan. Standard radiation generally means treatment with x-rays. And usually does a pretty good job of treating kind of a large generalized area, and that's often what we use it for.
Mm-hmm. And what are the different ways that it can be administered?
There's different ways. Kind of the most commonly used way would be by the use of a piece of equipment called a linear accelerator. It generates a kind of high-dose x-rays that can be shaped to match whatever target you need to treat. So that's what we call external beam radiation. Other ways it's delivered is sometimes with brachytherapy, where radioactive material is actually inserted into the patient. That's kind of a specialty type of treatment, but is sometimes needed for certain types of diagnoses.
And how does radiation interface with chemotherapy and surgery?
Right. Often, with surgery, most of the time surgery will happen first, and it would generally remove the bulk of the tumor. But we would often use radiation following surgery to address any microscopic or small residual areas that may have been left behind. In other cases, perhaps if there was a large tumor, we might do radiation first to shrink it to make it more readily removable with surgery. So those would be the two basic ways it would be used with surgery. With chemo, these days the most common way would be to actually do radiation and chemo at the same time, where the radiation would be used for the localized area where the bulk of the disease was, and then the chemo would be treating kind of the rest of the body for any potential areas of spread. And by doing them together actually enhances the effect of the radiation, so that's actually a common way to do it.
Okay. So if someone goes through surgery first, how soon after the surgery do they get a chance to heal for very long before they start, chemo,
right.
Radiation?
Usually at least a few weeks, and it depends on the situation. Most commonly 4-6 weeks, so the incisions heal and, you know, infections are overcome and those sorts of things. So yeah, there's usually not a need to start radiation immediately following surgery, but within some relatively short amount of time it would be.
Now, why does radiation work to treat cancer? What's the actual mechanism?
Right. Kind of on the cellular level, what happens, the energy from the radiation beam damages the DNA in the chromosomes of each cell to the point where they can no longer reproduce themselves. And, of course, that's the main problem with a malignant or cancer cell is they continue to grow and divide when they're not supposed to. So if the radiation can kind of inactivate the reproduction of the cells, that can, if you're successful, cure it. So.
And why does it pick off cancer cells more than it picks off our own normal cells?
Right. Well, there is a difference. Of course, it does affect the normal cells as well. And of course, that's where side effects can come into play. Fortunately, the way that radiation is delivered usually in small doses over many days, that takes advantage of the biology of the cancer cells being more sensitive to the radiation than are the normal cells. So, so there is a difference, but sometimes that difference isn't quite as much as we would like. So.
And that's because they're dividing more rapidly.
Correct.
They're just,
right.
They've got more DNA activity going on.
That and malignant cells generally are less capable of repairing the damage that's done. Normal cells, I mean, all cells have the ability to repair damage to the DNA, even radiation damage. But malignant cells don't do that as efficiently.
So that's a great mechanism at a cellular level for that kind of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Coming up next, we'll have a delicious recipe for you. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
The Lord is my rock. My fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold.
Every hour of every day, someone somewhere is praying for the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. Seven, seven, seven. Praying at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. 7 days a week.
Welcome back. We have Phil with us in the kitchen today. Phil, what are you making today?
I brought a recipe that I love. It's whole wheat crackers.
Oh, yum.
And the thing is that everyone likes to snack, and unfortunately a lot of the snacks that you can buy are not healthy, to say the least.
Right.
So I have this recipe that I absolutely love. It's a simple recipe, and it can be a lot of fun to make as well.
Is that
and
right?
A healthy snack.
Yeah. Fun to make, you can't beat that, because if it's fun to make, you're really in the mood to eat it when it comes out of the oven.
Exactly. And if you've got family, you can get the kids involved. It's just a fun activity.
Oh, great. Wow. Tell us what's in it.
Sure. Basically, it's very simple. There aren't many ingredients.
Yep.
You have 2 cups of whole wheat flour, and you want to make sure that it's whole wheat flour.
Right.
You have half a cup of olive oil, half a cup of water, and just half a teaspoon of salt. So it's very basic.
That is easy. Okay, tell us.
So let's begin.
Yeah.
Basically, you want to combine the water, the oil, and the salt. You're going to combine them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just going to kind of mix it up a little bit, sort of kind of make it a little bit frothy.
Right, because oil and water won't want to mix, so you force them together with a good whisk up or a good, yeah.
That's right. Okay. You can do this with a fork. You can do it with a whisk.
Mm.
And then after you've done that, you combine it with the flour.
Wow, they did combine nicely.
It's a little secret. Since your science teachers have always told you that oil and water don't mix,
yep.
It's just a little bit of a way to get them to mix together. So once you're done with that, you're going to pour it into your flour, and you're just going to kind of mix it up. Now it's going to get to the point where it's hard to mix.
Right.
And that's when it gets fun.
This is when the fun really begins,
hey? That's exactly right.
Right.
This is my favorite part, where you can get your hands wet. Now, the difficult thing is that you don't want to mix it too much.
Oh,
you
want
to get it to where it is a dough.
Yeah.
But if you mix it too much, it's going to kind of, the gluten strands are going to start working. And then you have a bread that, it works well for bread that's going to rise. For
okay.
This, it's not going to rise. It's just going to remain. So you want to mix it,
you want it
so that it becomes a dough. That's
right.
Correct.
Okay.
Now this is just about where we need it to be. I'm doing it with one hand, but I'm doing it all wrong.
You're doing it all wrong?
If you're going to get your hands dirty, you might as well get them both dirty.
One's going to get jealous otherwise. The clean one is going to get very jealous.
That's exactly it. And we'll give ourselves just a little bit to work with.
All right.
But basically, you want it to be a little bit softer than cookie dough.
Okay. Here, have this over the top.
Perfect. Ooh.
A little softer than cookie dough?
I would say, you know what, and I'm going to mix this just a tad more to keep it more together.
Mm.
But it's supposed to be a little bit flaky. You don't want it to be too wet.
Yep.
But you do want to be able to roll it out into a dough.
Okay.
And you'll play around with it a little bit and simply roll it out. You want to roll it until it's about the thickness of pie crust.
Okay. Yep.
So that you can cook it.
Yeah, because if you make it too thin, it gets really brittle and doesn't really hold together.
That's exactly it. And this is one where you're going to have edges that you'll need to just re-roll up, just like any other cookie dough. Mm.
Probably I need to help you here. Sorry, not paying attention. But you know, when you've got crackers, they really don't. Doesn't matter what shape you make them, does it?
That's exactly it. And you can use a regular knife to cut it.
Right.
I like to, I don't have too many opportunities where I can break out my pastry cutter.
Oh, very nice.
But it's a great opportunity to just give it a nice little cut.
Oh, I like that. What a neat gadget.
Exactly. You can cut squares, circles, whatever the kids want to do at the moment. You can even get some cookie cutters and you could do that. You can make it whatever shape, whatever fun shape, so it's fun to snack on.
Fun and healthy.
Exactly.
Hey, I like this.
There's one final thing you need to do.
Yeah.
And this is like any other cracker that you find in the store. Mm. There are always holes in them. Usually it's a decorative design.
Yep.
But there's a hidden meaning behind it. And basically, you want to poke holes in your dough in order to let the air out while it's baking so it doesn't bubble out and destroy.
Oh, yeah. It'll bubble and then flake and then it cracks as you...
Exactly.
That is great. Well, I've learned lots today. I hope you have too. We're going to munch away on our wheat crackers and, hey, you recognize this?
This was that terrific cottage cheese, tofu cottage cheese.
Tofu
that
cottage
we made in
cheese,
a previous
that's
episode.
Right.
Mm. Cheers.
Mmm. That is wicked. That is really wicked. I like that.
It's very simple, but it's a great snack.
Mm. Let's watch a video.
We were praising God when we hit the 36-week mark, and Chase was born December 31st, so it's a New Year's Eve baby. I told the kids that every year the entire world will celebrate his birthday, but they just don't know they're celebrating his birthday. He's our miracle baby. He's such a huge blessing to our entire family, especially after all that we went through. We all needed something to give us hope. Then February of 2012, I had the right breast removed, and they went in and took all the lymph nodes out of the left breast at the same time. And they gave me almost exactly 6 weeks, again, recovery out of that one to start radiation. And God has been so good through it all.
Their goal was to cure me and not just treat me. So as of right now, I am cancer-free.
The diagnosis was actually a blessing in disguise. It had allowed me to slow down and really focus on what was important in life. I find the most enjoyment the kids, from helping them with their homework to riding horses to watching them play in the yard. There's very rarely an animal that I will tell them they can't have. I love every moment with them. Once you're faced with possibly not having them and the thought that, you know, they might not have their mommy, it really tends to make you reprioritize just how important everything is. To me, life in general is what I celebrate every day waking up. just being able to wake up every day, really, from the air that we breathe to changing diapers. I mean, it all becomes enjoyable. The things that I think a lot of people take for granted on an everyday basis. I celebrate every moment of every day.
Now let's go back to our studio in Loma Linda, California, and learn more about radiotherapy from Dr. Bush. Dr. Bush, at Loma Linda University Medical Center, you have a pretty unique form of radiation for treating cancer. What is
it? That's proton beam. That's a form or type of radiation that has some substantial differences than the standard form, which would be X-ray or photon therapy.
How does it differ?
The main way that it differs is that photons or X-rays are they're like light waves. And as that type of radiation goes through the body, your body's tissues, it is attenuated but kind of keeps on going all the way through. And as you can imagine, the tumor is in a confined or specified area, but as X-rays pass all the way through, there's quite a bit of normal tissue and cells that end up getting radiated kind of inadvertently along with it.
Like tiny bullets that pass all the way through?
Well, we tend to think of protons being more like bullets.
Okay.
And that's a good analogy because protons, like bullets, actually have size and mass, whereas X-rays don't. That's why they tend to pass through.
Mm-hmm.
Protons, since they are particles, and like a bullet would, if shot into somebody, would slow down and stop. And that's what protons do. So. If we were to direct a proton beam into a patient, we know where that beam will stop, and we can make it penetrate just to the depth of the tumor. And then when it gets to the kind of deep side of the tumor, the beam will stop. So all of the tissues beyond it would be completely spared of any exposure to the radiation. Even on the entrance part, while there is some dose given with proton beam, it's substantially less than what you get with X-rays, and it's those are kind of the physical properties that go with proton beam, and is the reason we use it.
So the advantages are all around how it enters and exits the body.
Correct. Yeah, and it's the advantage to proton beam is really entirely about sparing healthy tissues. And of course, that's the main problem with radiation in general, is while we can kill any tumor with radiation given a high enough dose, the trouble is we have to do it in a way that doesn't damage the tissue around it to the extent that it causes substantial complications. So by using proton beam, it helps us get around that problem. So it kind of protects the healthy tissues for us, allowing us to do sometimes more aggressive treatment.
Any clinical disadvantages to proton beam?
Clinically, I guess I would say that it's a little more complicated to deliver. There are special things that need to be considered when giving proton therapy because it's very susceptible to this depth of penetration. You have to be very particular about how patients are set up, how they are immobilized or positioned for treatment. So there are some nuances that are unique to protons that don't exist for X-rays, but these are things that are known and we know how to deal with them, but that does take some paying attention to some of those details.
Now I understand you explaining how complicated it can be to just set that patient up just right. But I understand that Loma Linda is putting through more patients per year than any other
unit? We've been doing it for 20 years, so we've gotten good at it and become pretty efficient at doing many things. We've always kind of believed to do things efficiently and good, but also to keep things as simple as we can. With the notion being that we want to provide this kind of treatment for as many patients as can get it.
Now, when you first set up, how many units were there in the world?
Like ours, built in the hospital to treat patients, none. Ours was the one and only at that time.
And how long were you the one and only?
For quite some time. I think the next one to come along would have been in Japan, actually. The number of years, it was probably 5 or 10, I think,
wow.
where we were the only facility that was built from the ground up to treat patients.
Amazing. Now, is it as effective as standard radiotherapy?
Is it as effective? Well, certainly, I guess the way I'll answer that is, you know, dose for dose to the tumor, it's going to behave basically the same, right? So given the same dose to the tumor, we'd expect the same result with x-rays or protons. But the advantage is, of course, is less damage to the normal tissues. Mm-hmm. And because it's the normal tissue dose that often limits how much you can give, we can often give more. So by the fact that we can give a higher dose, we will, in certain cases, see better percentages of controlling the tumor and getting rid of them.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome.
When we come back, Sean will show us some healthy exercise moves for a great lifestyle. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. Headlines today, chest wall radiation damages the heart, and high-fat dairy linked to breast cancer recurrence. A new study from Oxford University has found that women receiving radiotherapy for breast cancer are more likely to later get ischemic heart disease. Exposure of the heart to ionizing radiation during standard radiotherapy for breast cancer increases the subsequent rate of ischemic heart disease. The increase is proportional to the dose of radiation to the heart, and it begins within a few years after exposure, continuing for at least 20 years. Women with pre-existing cardiac risk factors have greater increases in risk than other women undergoing radiotherapy. With proton beam radiation, the heart can be spared the damaging effects of radiation. Women who have previously been treated for early-stage breast cancer were 50% more likely to die from breast cancer if they had a steady intake of high-fat dairy foods. This study has been published by the National Cancer Institute, and they followed women for 12 years. Participants were divided into two groups: those who ate one or more servings of high-fat dairy products each day versus those eating less than a half a serving a day or none at all. The high-fat dairy group were also 64% more likely to die, especially from cardiovascular disease. Dairy foods included cow's milk, cheese, ice cream, dairy desserts, and yogurt. So if you've had breast cancer, or you're someone at high risk of getting it, then do yourself a favour. Avoid dairy products, especially if they are full cream. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report. Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Sean, new toy. I haven't seen this one before.
Yeah. Well, we had it a long time ago, but this is a ladder. All right, you can use these. It's called an agility ladder.
Okay.
And you can get one at Walmart, wherever it is, just for a great workout, especially for kids. They love it.
All right.
Okay, but today, normally we do our warm-up.
I'm just a big kid, so this is going to be fun.
So we're going to do a little bit of a different workout today, okay? I'll be performing an exercise while you do an exercise, okay? After I finish, for example, I'm going to show you here, okay? I'm going to go in, out. I'm going to jog it back, all right? I'm going to do that 3 times while you're holding a plank position.
No.
Yes.
Do we get to swap?
We get to swap.
Oh, phew.
All right?
All right, that sounds fair.
All right, so that's fair. That's not, you want to start with the ladder?
No, I'll start with
all right, so let's go. All right, I'm going to go 3 times. Every time I come back to the start position, that's considered one.
Okay.
Okay? But you have to hold the plank. So give me some encouragement. Make me do it quick because
I will.
The longer you keep the plank position.
All righty.
In 3, two, and one, go.
Come on, Sean, run.
Great way to burn some calories.
Don't walk, run.
And then fix the ladder.
No, don't fix the ladder.
And then back, switch,
switch. How many times do we have to do this?
We'll just do it once.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Now, this plank position is great for core development, core stabilization, working your lower back a little bit. There you go. Come on. Keep your partner going.
Good one.
That was two.
Come on. Hold it down.
Come on. Switch.
That was switch.
Three. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. A great way to encourage your partner is to just keep them going. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not over that quick.
No.
Okay.
Really?
So the next one, all right, we're going to keep with the ladder drill.
Yeah.
Okay. But this time, it's like this. Okay. Right leg here. And we're going to keep going down.
That's more complicated.
Once you get back to the start, that's considered one.
Okay? Oh, okay.
But what you're doing in the meantime are air squats. Coming down. Yep. Until I'm finished. Okay. I'm just going to do this twice, and then we switch.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Well, I'll just stay down this end.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
In three, two, and one. Go. Switch.
Ah.
Keep your partner going.
Okay.
Come on, Doc.
Oh.
Don't worry. There you go.
Finished.
There you go.
That was
so you're getting your cardio in at the same time, working some of your muscles, your legs, your quads, and your core.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you can pick any two exercises.
Okay.
It's good that you have one cardiovascular exercise and then one strength building exercise.
Right.
You like the plank or the squats better?
I don't mind.
You don't mind?
Don't mind.
So you want to do it one more time?
Okay. All right.
All right.
Plank it is.
The plank it is. All right. Let's go.
All righty.
You got to keep your partner going. You can set a timer for about 15 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you want to do. I'm just going to go twice in three, two, and one. Go. Switch. Let's go. Come on.
Okay.
There you go. Keep your partner going. Come on, Doc. There you go. There you go. Nice.
Ah.
And sweet.
There we go.
Not bad. You got me sweating in here a little bit.
We have. We have to do the squat one as well.
Let's do the squat. You ready?
Okay.
All right, in three, two, and one. Go. And switch.
Wow, you're fast.
That works in
I
your
get
favor.
All mixed up with
that
this
works
one.
In your favor, right?
Yeah, it does.
Ready?
I
three,
think.
Two, and one. Go. Come on. There you go. Perfect. I'm tired.
Done. Yeah.
Not bad. You burned some calories.
Yeah.
Now you imagine keeping that going for about 15 minutes.
That would be so much fun.
Oh, you get a nice little workout.
Especially the outdoors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With a longer ladder, oh, you get a nice workout.
Yeah. Longer ladder, no.
No? We could double the length of this ladder.
Yeah, we could.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's stretch it out, okay?
Okay.
We could leave this here, actually. We'll
Alrighty.
Move it down that way.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. You know what? We're going to stretch the quads out a bit.
All right.
Let's take the right quad and point the knee down, chest up. And switch. Now those quads may be nice and tight now. So a great way
to
stretch
like
them out a little bit.
Stretch.
Here's another one. Let's go to the right hand side. Okay. Let's go here. Point this toe up. Let's go to the opposite side. Back to the middle. Then come up nice and slow. How you feel?
Good.
Good.
That was great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
See you next time, and let's watch another ageless advantage.
Nuts, like almonds and peanuts, are full of healthy antioxidants. But not every almond or peanut on the supermarket shelf has the same antioxidant punch. Most of the nuts' antioxidants are found in their outer soft covering. When this is damaged through peeling or blanching, half or more of the antioxidants are lost. Choose raw almonds over blanched, and enjoy your peanuts with the brown papery covering intact. Choosing nuts in their natural state is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Have you missed a previous episode or one of our recipes? Then visit our website at hopetv.org/gohealthy. We're also on iTunes, so look for our video podcast there. Now, do you have a health-related question? Then call us, 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Thanks for calling us with your questions, your comments, and for posting them on our Facebook page. Here are some questions that we haven't had a chance to answer on previous shows. Michelle posted on Facebook, "I really enjoy this program." Grace called and asked, "What are the optional treatments for prostate cancer? What treatments might increase life expectancy?" Well, Grace, prostate cancer can be very slow-growing and affect elderly men. And so if that's very late in their life and it's a very slow-growing tumour, you might be advised to wait and watch and not treat it. There are also the options of surgery and radiotherapy, so get some good advice from an expert. One caller asked, what are the causes of breast cancer? We actually are not sure what causes breast cancer, but we know that there are some risk factors, like alcohol, your genes, a family history, an early menarche, a late menopause, high BMI. Those are all important. I want to thank you for sending your questions. Keep them coming. Don't forget to call us with your health-related question at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Coming up next, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Bush, and we'll get to know the story of Mary, an amazing testimony of a proton therapy patient. All of that in 30 seconds. Don't move.
My soul clings to the dust. Revive me according to your word. Having been born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible, through the word of God, which lives and abides forever.
And now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified.
So many ways to experience the Bible.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Today we're talking about proton therapy in regards to breast cancer. If you have a health question, then call us. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Before we continue the interview with Dr. Bush in Loma Linda's studio in California, let me introduce you to Mary. Her story is amazing. Take a look.
Mary Hicks has always had a competitive side in her. And at 77 years old, she's still set on winning.
I need to practice some more.
But now, her battles are different than they were back in her college basketball days.
4 months ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I said, oh, no, it's not any time to do any crying. We got to go to work now. Let's see, how are we going to fix this thing?
This grandmother's gung-ho attitude stems back to her childhood.
I was born in Macon, Georgia, and grew up there. I went to college after high school, got a basketball scholarship, and attended Savannah State. And I had a math major, and I have taught for 40 years. I wanted to go into math, but number one, I looked around, there wasn't any female math teachers. They were very, very limited. And I said, oh, this thing needs to change. So that was my motivator, just observing women not going in this field because they were discouraged not to go in there. That was number one. We were told we were supposed to stay in the kitchen, in the home, and do the housework. So I said, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. So I decided that, all right, it is now time for me to make the change. And that's why I think that we see so many more female doctors, engineers, and in all of these other fields that's out. It came from my generation and the stand we took during that time. I look back when I walk into the doctor's office now, sometimes I tell them, wow, I'm proud to see you here. Because at one time I'd walk in there, all I saw was, no offense guys, but all I saw was male doctors.
About a week after Mary's diagnosis at Loma Linda, doctors performed surgery to remove the tumor.
When I went back for the consultation on the lumpectomy, she was rather pleased with what she saw. And she said they had got it all that she could see, but the human eye cannot tell the difference in the normal cells from the abnormal cells. So to make sure they got them all, they need to do radiation. Chemotherapy wouldn't be needed because it hadn't spread it beyond the margin. I learned that I had a choice between the proton and the standard radiation.
Dr. Bush, I believe at Loma Linda Medical Center at the proton therapy unit there, you are now beginning to treat breast cancer with proton beams. Why use that modality?
Right. The reason, like it is with most treatments, is because we can focus and confine the radiation area to a much more discrete and confined area than you can do with standard radiation. So the type of treatment that we're currently delivering for breast cancer is in something that's called partial breast radiation. Mm-hmm. And this is where we, instead of radiating the entire breast, which would be the standard way to do it, we choose to just radiate the area of the breast where the tumor originated at. And it turns out that proton's a good tool to do that kind of treatment with.
So this, I'm suspecting, is just if someone's had a lumpectomy rather than a mastectomy?
Correct, right. At this point, it's not a replacement for the surgery or the lumpectomy, but it would be the radiation treatment done after the lumpectomy. The traditional way would be whole breast radiation, and we're doing that instead of treating the whole breast, just the part of the breast that needs it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that you've actually started a trial looking at this to find out some further information about
right.
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we initiated the first trial actually back in 2004, so it's been a while, and these kind of projects take time to accrue patients and then follow them afterwards. So the initial trial, we treated 100 patients, and so they've all been treated and are in follow-up now. And the data that we're seeing back from those patients so far is actually quite good, and we're very encouraged by that data. Mm-hmm. And what we've done now, just last year, we opened up a second trial, kind of building off what we learned from the first, and we're continuing to do that today.
Hmm. And how many patients are you looking for this trial?
In the second trial, 150.
Okay. Tell us, what did you learn from that first trial?
Okay, yeah. The first trial, what we learned was that by using proton beam and doing it this way, we can completely avoid any radiation to tissues of the lung and the heart and the ribs. And the reason that's important is because with standard whole breast radiation, there are at least small portions of each one of those things that kind of get inadvertently radiated, and that can sometimes lead to side effects, and sometimes bad side effects.
What sort of side effects
right,
in those organs?
In the bones of the ribs, it can lead to fractures. In the lung, it can cause scarring in the lungs that can lead to respiratory problems. In the heart, it actually, years after treatment, can lead to heart disease and heart attacks. So some of these things can be pretty substantial. So we believe by not radiating them that we're going to avoid all of those kind of side effects.
Mm. Yeah, it seems a shame to treat the cancer but then limit the patient's life by
Correct.
The therapy.
That's the idea.
Yeah, so you're in this tension all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a particular, for this trial, is there a particular kind of breast cancer that you're actually recruiting?
Right. It's primarily for what we'd call early stage breast cancer, meaning that the process is limited just to the breast. that there hasn't been spread to any other areas, especially the lymph nodes. That's usually one of the first place it would travel to would be the lymph nodes in the axilla or in the armpit. Mm. So those need to be checked and proven to be negative. Beyond that, if the tumor is not too large and not spread within the breast, then most of those patients would be eligible to participate.
Mm. And is it done in those cases? Is it done instead of surgery, following surgery, before surgery?
Right. All of this would be done following surgery. We need to know exactly what type of cancer it is, how big it is, check the lymph nodes, and all that needs to be done surgically first. Mm. So, mm-hmm. So currently all the work is being done after the surgery.
And are those patients coming just from Loma Linda Medical Center surgical units, or are they coming from elsewhere?
Initially, most of the patients were coming from our own Loma Linda surgeons, but as the trial has progressed, we've had more and more interested patients come from outside of Loma Linda. So we've treated, I think on the current trial now, it's probably about 40% of the patients we enroll are from outside of Loma Linda. So patients can travel and get the treatment and return home.
Mm. And what does a typical regime look like on the trial?
Right. It's one nice thing about it is a quick and easy treatment. Mm-hmm. Standard radiation would go for 6 or 7 weeks. Because we're radiating a small area, we can get this treatment complete in 2 weeks. So it makes it quicker, more convenient, and potentially cheaper in the long run for this method.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you well on that trial.
Thank you.
Friends, remember to call us with your health question. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be back after a short break, so stay there.
All around the world, Seventh-day Adventists are reading one chapter of the Bible per day. We call it Revived by His Word. Please join in and visit the Revived by His Word website. Open today's reading and read the accompanying blog. Add your comments or read the comments of others. Get the Google Calendar to remind you, or download the printable calendar of the reading program. Learn more about Revived by His Word and how you can tell others about this project.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. If you have a health-related question, then call us. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, before we continue our conversation with Dr. Bush, let's take a look at this video.
And I said, well, okay, I'll take the proton.
Step one of proton treatment, getting fitted with a breast cup. Step two, creating a custom-made mold of her body, called a pod.
Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right.
So you're going to get up on here, okay?
Good thing I went to the gym.
Yeah.
You're mobile, that's what we like.
She's very, very limber.
All right, now we're just going to slide you over here a little bit, and then we can access both sides, and we're going to mix up this two-part foam over here. You'll hear the blender mixing. Uh-huh. And it's just expanding foam, and we're going to pour it in, and then I'm going to wait a few minutes. You're going to feel it rise up around you. And then once it hardens up, it's going to solidify, we'll just tape it down, and that'll be your device.
This will help Mary remain still during treatment, so the proton beams hit the tumor in the same exact location during each session.
It won't get on you, we promise. We haven't glued anybody in a pod yet. Yep, slowly rising up, so once it gets to the edge, then we'll tape it down. Enjoying it?
Yeah.
All right. So you like to hear?
It's very comfortable. So it's not too hot. It's like just right.
An electric blanket?
Well, it feels more cozy.
Okay.
After 15 minutes, her pod is created.
Check it out. It's yours.
Wow.
So, custom made for only you.
Step 3. A CT scan is taken to determine the best path for the proton beam to travel. From these images, a device called an aperture is then constructed to form the shape of the beam. During the next couple days, the team designs her customized treatment plan. Mary is now ready to enter the gantry.
down to your side. We're going to start on your left side, okay?
First, the proton team takes x-rays to make sure Mary is lined up in perfect position for the proton beam.
Once we get you lined up properly, everything's where it should be. We're going to load up that nozzle with your beam shaping devices, the ones that were made just for you and for the field that we're going to treat. You have an aperture and a bolus, a metal aperture which shapes the area, and then the bolus which helps control the contour of the beam, or the depth of the beam.
This was some pleasant trip. I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel stress, pressure. It was relaxing.
After 10 short days of proton therapy, Mary's cancer treatment is complete.
So it was just like a regular routine, and it also worked right into my exercise and plan. So, I didn't feel like I was doing anything different. When I talked to the doctor, she said, "You are already cancer-free." I said, "Oh, thanks very much. I'm going to relax. It's gone." And so let me continue on with my life. My days are full of activities. I'm never bored. It's a beautiful life.
Dr. Bush, we've just been talking about proton beam therapy and the breast cancer trial. And have you noticed a difference between, I know you're still in the trial stage for this particular one, but on an individual basis, women who have a lumpectomy and standard radiation versus women who have a lumpectomy and proton beam therapy, how do they compare? What is their experience? Is it different?
Right. The comparisons we have to make are comparing our results to kind of our historical controls, meaning patients who've had whole breast treatment at our facility. And we've begun to look into some of those types of comparisons. But generally what we see side effect-wise would be the skin reaction, which often looks like a redness or a burn, is something that's much more limited when we do it with proton therapy. When you do whole breast radiation, you can see these kinds of skin changes or burning over the entire kind of chest wall, whereas when we're using proton beam and treating just a small area, you will, if you're going to see any of those effects, it'll be confined to a much smaller area. So generally the skin reactions are less.
How long does a skin reaction last?
Right, like any other kind of skin irritation, once the irritant's removed, the skin's pretty resilient in repairing. So usually if there is any redness or anything like that, that's something that's resolved within a couple of weeks of finishing treatment.
And it doesn't cause scarring in the longer term?
Not on the skin surface. Mm-hmm. There can be scarring that takes place in the deeper tissues below the skin. So there can be scarring under deeper. Mm-hmm. Of course, surgery plays a role in that. Radiation does as well. But likewise, when we use proton therapy, the volume that's going to be exposed to this scarring process is going to be substantially less than what you would get with whole breast radiation.
So from a cosmetic perspective, is there a difference between those two?
We think so. That's something that we're measuring as part of the trial. There are questionnaires and things we give our patients to let them kind of self-assess their cosmetic result. We do that in the same way that other centers have also done it. And preliminarily anyway, we've seen that they seem to maintain a better cosmetic result than what's been reported with other types of radiation. So we think we're on the right track in that, but it's going to take more study and more data to prove that out.
Now, I think one of the disadvantages with proton beam is the cost. How do patients get over that barrier? Does insurance cover it, or what's happening with your trial?
Right. Well, today, as part of the clinical trial, the treatment is actually provided as part of the trial. Because it's new and different, we realize that very few insurers would likely cover it. So to in this data gathering phase of what we're doing, the treatment's actually provided. But our hope is that in the long run, compared to 7 weeks of standard radiation, that by shortening the treatment down to 2 weeks, also makes it quite a bit cheaper. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that in the long run the treatment will prove to be cheaper than standard therapy.
Wow, that's exciting. Now, what other tumors can be used, can proton beam be used for?
Right, we use it for many other things, but things that we've spent some time researching and are continuing to do so would be in lung cancer. We for small, again, localized mm-hmm. tumors, for patients who can't have surgery or perhaps don't want surgery to remove them. We've been quite successful at eradicating lung cancers with proton beam, so that's been an exciting project, and we've come a long way from the beginning of that one. Mm. Another one is in liver tumors. Tumors in the liver can be very difficult to treat. They can many times not be removed with surgery, and mm-hmm. a number of them aren't very responsive to chemotherapy. So we've been targeting those types of tumors with radiation or with proton radiation, allowing us to give a substantially higher dose, again, because we can minimize the damage to the rest of the liver. Mm. And we've actually been pretty successful at eradicating those tumors as well. So
perfect. So those are liver primary tumors,
correct.
Not metastatic tumors,
correct. Well, we're just starting to do some work in metastatic tumors. That's
okay.
A new project, but we have a pretty good track record of treating primary liver tumors, and mm-hmm. we've actually got two different randomized trials going on comparing it to standard treatment. So we're excited about both of those projects.
Any other particular tumors?
Well, we treat a lot of tumors in the brain and the head and neck area. And another key area that we're focusing on is in children and pediatric cancers. Because of the more limited exposure that proton beam has, it can spare children of a lot of side effects.
Oh yes, for a lifetime, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. Our time's flown by. It's been great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
If you're facing the challenge of breast cancer, there are many decisions to make. Remember to make great choices every morning. Start each day with courage and hope. Get active. Eat lots of salads, both fruit and vegetable salads. Have some soy. Avoid high-fat dairy. Stay in shape and end each day being grateful for all the blessings that you have in life. If things are getting rough, be grateful for the bad things that didn't happen. And when it comes to choices about treatment, if radiation is recommended, you might want to consider proton therapy. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.